Hello everyone, my name is Phil Blancato. I'm CEO and President of Latimer Thalmann Asset Management. Today is April 29th, 2020. Well, certainly as we go through the weeks and now months of the coronavirus and the impact on the overall U.S. economy, we continue to learn so many new and different things and watch the situation evolve fairly rapidly. Let's just start with where we always start. Right now, globally, we're over 3.2 million confirmed cases. Unfortunately, there are over 220,000 deaths. There are active cases at 1.9 million. And in the United States, we have over 1.50 million cases and roughly 60,000 deaths. Terrible numbers to start off with. But it's important to remember, very much in line, this is not what we expected anymore. Actually, these are below the expectations that were originally set out for the number of folks who will be infected by this virus. When you look at Europe, for example, that not roughly today 1.4 million people infected and 127,000 deaths, that is also significantly below what was expected. A note of thanks to the U.S. medical system that our death to infected ratio versus Europe is almost 60% better. So kudos to the American nurses and doctors who are helping us get through this pandemic. When we look at the virus and we try to wrap our head around how bad it is and how bad it's going to get, initial estimates were over 240,000 deaths in the United States. That number's come down to now just about 70,000. So certainly a significant improvement. And the headlines around the globe are telling us things are getting better. Whether it's when you look at places like Italy, which has been a bit of a bellwether. Italy posted its lowest number of new coronavirus cases in the last 7 weeks this past week. And Italy now is down to roughly 1,700 cases a day, 1,700, down from roughly 6,000 cases a day. And that's a significant improvement. The number of recovered patients rose to 66,000, so they now have more folks that have recovered than are sick. And the number of deaths has come to an all-time low since the virus began for them, so they have improved significantly. Spain recorded the lowest number of deaths of 288 this past week, so also improving significantly. Places like New Zealand, for example, a relatively small country with 5 million people, have claimed they won over the outbreak, and now their number of new cases are less than 10 a day. Japan, a country that actually didn't close down nearly as much as the United States, took an approach of focusing on the most sick and being more focused on who is most likely to be infected and fatal, have had a significant improvement and are now at the lowest level of new cases in the last 3 weeks. So really exciting information around that. Add to that we're seeing a number of countries beginning to open up across the board, whether it's Germany, Austria, Spain, France, Norway, Denmark, India, Iran, and Italy, all opening in one facet or another of whether it's schools, small businesses, or for example, in Spain, 300,000 non-essential workers going back to work is all reasons for excellent optimism, which is partly why the stock market is up so much in recent days. Add to that, even in the United States, we're beginning the process of opening up the economy. Now, it comes with careful trepidation as we start to realize who and who might not open, but Colorado, Alaska, Minnesota, Georgia, Mississippi, Montana, Oklahoma, South Carolina, and Tennessee all in the process of opening up, with all numerous other states beginning to open as well. I live in New Jersey, and that process is much slower and further behind it, but certainly that process is beginning. And it really comes down to the data, even in New York, when you look at the rate of infection around the country, believe it or not, it's actually very similar no matter where you live. The lockdowns, how severe or not severe, really came down to outside of the New York, New Jersey area, everywhere else in the country was fairly similar. And that the far and away, the vast preponderance of folks infected are in the New York metropolitan area. And outside of that, the numbers are quite manageable, like California or Florida, for example, where they've taken an approach similar to Japan of focusing on the most sick and making sure that the folks who could get sick, like senior citizens and those who have pre-existing conditions, would be able to be protected. And that process has worked very well for Florida. Even in New York City, when we dive into the data, in recent days, the number of people getting infected and going to the hospital has come down significantly. The U.S. naval ship Comfort is actually leaving New York City, adding to that the opening and now closing of the Jacob Javits Center for excess patients is no longer needed and are actually shutting the facility down. In New York City, we've actually seen not only the number of people passing away come down significantly, but also the number of people being infected and even the number of cases. In fact, just yesterday, we had less than 100 people report into hospitals, which is thousands lower than where we were. So a significant improvement. In fact, recently there was an antibody test that took place both in Los Angeles and in New York City. And we're beginning to realize that there are millions of people in the New York metropolitan area, perhaps as many as 3 million people are showing antibodies through a small sampling of people, roughly 7,500 tested. When looked at the bulk of those people who had the antibody test and extrapolating out to the New York City area, roughly 2.7 million people specifically may have already had the disease and showing antibodies, which allows them to have a resistant strain. Similar data in the Los Angeles County, where nearly 500,000 people are showing antibodies by testing in a similar approach. So really exciting news on the virus front as to the rate of infection. We now understand better than ever who has it, and we're also seeing the social distancing, physical distancing work, and seeing the number of cases of people who have been affected by it really come down. And maybe some of the best news that when looked at for children, of nearly 150,000 kids who under the age of 18 for 150,000 people, of those 150,000, only 1.7 of those actually were under the age of 18. So the virus has very little impact on children, allowing us to think about how we could open up schools and universities at some point down the road because of the ability to think smartly about how, in fact, we're going to open up the U.S. economy and the global economy for that matter. Kind of a fun anecdotal story. Many of you might remember the Manhattan Project of way back when we had a collaborative effort during World War II to actually come up with a way to find out to develop nuclear power to protect us or to fight the war at that time. And it was done with a private sector initiative. Something very similar to that's taking place right now, a new Manhattan Project where some of the wealthiest people in the world in a not-for-profit situation are coupling with some of the best scientists in the world to create not just a left and a right, not just Democrat and Republican approach to the virus, but a collaborative effort to inspect every single possible cure that could come to the marketplace to help give relief to the federal government and speed the process of finding some sort of resistant strain. One of the most exciting things as of today is that we saw Gilead Sciences, a company that has a drug called Remdesivir, come out and say that their initial trials are proving to be very effective. In fact, the reason why the market is up today as we speak, roughly 2.8%, making the peak to trough, how much we lost. Remember, we were down nearly 34% on the S&P at one point. Believe it or not, if today's data holds, we'll be down only about 8% on the year. What we're finding is that things like these events, whether it's Gilead, who the National Institute of Health, not the company specifically, reported some really exciting news that in a double-blind placebo-controlled study, which is considered the gold study of testing drugs, came out that they met their Remdesivir has met its primary endpoint in the study, meaning the drug works. What we're finding is something to the tune of 70 to 90% of the people who have serious conditions created from the coronavirus can get off the ventilator and become healthy in a 5 or 10 day dosage. This is very exciting news because one of the obvious impacts of this is the overpopulation in our hospitals. Well, the good news is around the country, the number that's targeted is having the infective rate or the population capacity rate of hospitals, the number of people in hospitals fall below 70%. Now, every single medical center in the country is below 70%, except for New York. If you have a drug like Remdesivir that can help get people out of the medical ward and bring the number down even more significantly, then suddenly the pressure on hospitals is gone and we'll be able to manage the virus more effectively as we open up the economy. So really exciting news on the virus front. I would add is a few other components that have come up recently that I think are really worth talking or just quickly hitting on. From the vaccine situation, there's a drug being developed by Oxford University in partnership with the Institute of Health in the Rocky Mountains, a laboratory in Montana, where they have a drug that's been used on monkeys, a particular type called Marikou monkeys, which have a very similar genetic makeup to humans. And in that study, those monkeys were exposed to the virus, and 28 days later, after taking this vaccine, all six were perfectly healthy. They've had so much success with it. They're now beginning human trials on 550 participants, and they'll do another 6,000 by the end of the month. Really exciting news. Moderna, another drug that has been talked quite a bit about, one of the first drugs to come to market with a vaccine, is now up over into phase two trials, meaning they're getting closer to be able to develop a permanent vaccine that can be used by the fall. On the testing front, one of the things that's been talked about openly is that we may need to test as many as 5 million people a day to be able to effectively understand who has it and prevent the economy from shutting down a second time. Well, the good news is part of the latest round of stimulus issued by the federal government, $25 billion has been put aside to meet that goal. And in fact, as of late, the federal government, in agreement with Harvard, believe it or not, thinks they can meet that ideal goal of testing millions of people a day. And one of the ways we'll do that is a product from LabCorp called the Pixel, which now at the end of this week will be available for you to do your own at-home take test. So imagine having your own ability to test yourself at home on as often as you feel it's necessary. I myself live in New Jersey, where there's a CityMD, which is an actual local walk-in medical facility. I called yesterday, and if I like, I can go in there just tomorrow or today or whenever I like and get a test. That's really pretty significant improvement when it comes to the idea of how we're getting tested, when we're getting tested, which allows us to really open up the economy. So exciting news on the medical front. There's over 160 different trials in place in one way or another of new drugs or new vaccines or repurposing of existing drugs. And some of those are showing excellent signs, whether it's Remdesivir that believes their antivirus, which is another company, will be ready by June, or Johnson & Johnson and thinks they can have global they're speeding up their global vaccination and maybe be able to having it approved and ready for use before the year's over. These are major breakthroughs. And that's why we're seeing so much optimism around the overall stock market and why it's been up so much. And whether it's numerous states going into the opening up process or globally, the idea of restarting the economy is now front and center. And the trick is, how can we do that? Well, first and foremost, the federal government over the weekend passed another stimulus bill of $484 billion. That was to continue the process of funding that small business plan, the Paycheck Protection Program, so that we can continue to build a bridge to the other side of the virus. Give small businesses enough money to be able to sustain themselves through this overall pandemic and be able to restart themselves on the other side. And interestingly enough, when you look outside the New York area, where 10% of our national GDP is from the New York area, the other 90% is beginning to think about a step-by-step plan to open up. You think about Georgia, which is the first state to open up. On the plus side, economically, we should begin a slow grind higher in economic data. But on the negative side, being very careful that the number of cases do not spike and that a measured, controlled opening could work to the effect that we're able to open up large parts of the economy, but do so smartly. There's no doubt that the economic impact has been profound. Coming tomorrow, we'll probably see another 3.3 million people hit the unemployment line. That's obviously a terrible number. We're closing in on 30 million people who are going to apply for unemployment. That could be an unemployment rate as high as 16%. Just this morning, GDP, gross domestic product, for the first quarter came out, and it was negative 4.8%, worse than expected. Roughly, we were expecting negative 4. Second quarter GDP could be as bad as negative 35%. We're looking at how much companies earn. Their projections for the first quarter were supposed to be plus 4 before all this started. Now we're looking at a negative 16% for the first quarter and negative 32 for the second quarter. Incredibly terrible numbers. And when you think about the overall economic impact, to be quite honest with you, there are still many unknowns about how bad this would be. But for a minute, focus on the consumer. The consumer is the focal point of the U.S. economy, those that we need to spend the most and create the most to drive the economy back to open again. So whether it's Starbucks in China, that 99% of those are open, we're seeing Chinese GDP begin to grow. The amount of pollution they're emitting is actually increasing, and that's the way we measure it. Electrical demand, and even the CEO of Boeing came out and said the supply chain that they use for parts from China is actually beginning to pick up again. Why? Well, we're about a month behind China. And if they're exemplary of what could happen to us, we're seeing it open there. But in the U.S. situation, we're watching the amount of money consumer saving significantly go higher, closing in on 9% savings rate. Add to that, the amount of money in credit card debt is going straight down. So those are good signs that the consumer coming out of this will not only be able to buy cheap gasoline. I paid $1.75 a gallon this weekend in New Jersey. Have lots of cash available to them, whether it's from the Federal Reserve that's issuing $1,100 a week to the average person who is out of unemployed, or the fact that they're just saving more and spending less, and the fact that they can get low interest rates to buy things when this does all end. The consumer is really in pretty good shape, and something came out just in the last couple of days here that's critical to talk about. While GDP was terrible, we look a lot about sentiment, what consumers think about the overall economy. And the sentiment is something that's critical to understand whether or not that consumer will kick back in. And we did see the headline Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index go fall down to 71.8 from 89.1. That's a pretty significant drop. We saw consumer board confidence, which is a similar measure, measuring consumer confidence from a board of governors. That number came down from 118 to 86, a terrible number. That's the worst drop since 1973. But that's the top number. Below the surface, we look at sub-indexes. And in fact, on the sub-index, which is relating to future expectations, what the average consumer thinks is going to happen, that number went up by 7 points to 93, which means the consumer thinks the pandemic is going to be temporary. Adding to that, business conditions are expected to improve as well. So the consumer, again, thinks this is going to be temporary. That is critical because if the consumer spends, or how the consumer spends is how we grow. If the consumer doesn't spend, we don't grow. And in that approach where we begin to open up the economy in a slow, methodical approach, it certainly makes it critical to understand what exactly the consumer's thinking and whether or not they're going to spend. A separate and anecdotal point, the housing market. The housing market was a real point of strength going into all this, where in fact we saw new home construction top 1.7 million on an annualized basis. Home construction is critical. And the reason why when we build new homes, a lot that goes into that. The wood, nails, the bricks, the mortar, so on, and the people building them. That number fell to 1.2 million, a significant drop. But, and that would be expected, but we're looking at the price of existing homes actually going higher. The supply of new homes coming to marketplace is actually pretty low. But unlike 2008, where that was a catastrophic event that affected finances and homes around the country, in this scenario, your most valuable asset, your house, is actually holding on and maybe even increasing in value. So if you have a strong consumer sentiment and you've got your house holding up in its value, and you wrap it all together with the positives in all this, that the consumer themselves should be able to hold on here, and low energy prices, and low interest rates, and high savings rate, means when we get through this, that consumer has a good chance to be able to rebound pretty significantly to get us prepared for what could come on the other side of this. So important components of it. The data is going to continue to get worse. Second quarter GDP could be as much as negative 35. Earnings could go down to negative 35 as well, the 30 plus. So no doubt that data is going to get worse before it gets better. But I think there's reasons for optimism that we are beginning to make a slow, methodical approach to opening up the U.S. economy. Many of this data is not unlike what we saw in 2008, 2009. So this isn't a new scenario for us in that sense, but we are somewhat optimistic that we've been through this before and maybe we'll be prepared to see how we exit this on the other side of finding a vaccine or finding an antivirus. A separate and more important point. One of the narratives around this virus has been that when the weather gets warm, the virus should in fact slow down because of heat and humidity. And in fact, when you look at where the current global rate of infection is, you look at where the most people are infected, it is in areas of the world that have average temperatures between 32 and 60 degrees. Warmer than that and colder than that doesn't exist. Colder makes some sense, obviously. And in fact, as we head into the summer season in places like Europe and the United States, where the bulk of the cases are, suddenly we have a profound opportunity to be able to limit the rate of infection and prepare us for the fall. So when you get excited about a Gilead that can come to market here with a drug to help really sick people get better, or the numerous other antiviruses that are in production and many of those being put to use as soon as late May and early June, gives reason for us to have optimism going into September. Because as we see the number of cases significantly decline, and current projections are that in places like Italy, they'll go to a negative growth rate, meaning the number of people getting better and the number of people exiting the hospital will far surpass those getting sick. That should happen next week in Italy, and it's already beginning to happen. It's actually happening faster than expected. And should happen here in the United States in 2 weeks, assuming we get to a case where we have just a few hundred people a day getting sick in the United States through the summer. We have to prepare ourselves for the fall. And in that scenario, it's all about the race for a vaccine. And a critical component in this, while it's exciting that other countries are racing to the vaccine as well, it's imperative that the United States gets to a vaccine in its own right. And by that, I mean being able, one that we can develop here, produce here, give to our citizens to help our citizens get better, as well as open up our economy faster than everybody else, is another aspect of that that I think we can't forget about. Dr. Scott Gottlieb talked about this in length, that it's not only important to, from a personal level, to make sure we get people better, but understand that we need to have it here first so we can help our economy recover, because we are creating a significant amount of debt. And it's imperative that the amount of debt that we're creating has a strong economy to support it once we get through this entire pandemic. The economic data being not great, there is one point that I want to hint or have a word of caution. Well, you've noticed the stock market really rocket from lows of down negative 34% at one point to today, after today, probably about a negative 8. That's of great concern for me, because to be quite honest with you, the stock market has come too far too fast. We have earned too much too quickly. And the reason why that's important is because generally the stock market works on earnings, and earnings being based on how much companies earn, and then looking at how much they cost or the price that they're trading at is when you make a decision to buy or sell stock. Well, stocks on the S&P 500 are trading at, believe it or not, a 30% premium, meaning they're expensive. It's like going to the food store and paying 30% extra for tomatoes or eggs. Why would you buy those? You'd probably buy a lot less of those. That's the scenario or the environment that we're in right now. And the reason why is because I mentioned earlier, earnings are expected to be terrible. And as terrible earnings come out for the second quarter, it makes the value of the stock market be significantly less. It's something I think we need to be mindful of, because while it's exciting to see much of your assets recover, on a go-forward basis, I would expect some pretty significant volatility as news around the virus comes out, both positive and negative. I'm sure we'll see signs about new drug announcements, speeding the process of coming up with a new drug to market, testing it, and having better and better results. Is a global and American effort to put together the fastest race ever to come up with a vaccine or an antivirus. That's exciting. But these things still take time. Additionally, if along the way we see a spike in new cases, because as we open up the economy, we don't do so carefully, that would be also very problematic. So I think it's important to note that while we've come really far really fast, the economic data still underneath it all is somewhat concerning. And for that reason, you want to be careful to not think all good, all great, and start to move forward as if we're pulled some golden lever and all of a sudden things are significantly better, not just globally, but in the United States. When you sum it all up, there is reasons for great optimism, whether it's Italy and the number of cases coming down, here in New York City, anywhere else in the country, the process of opening up. If you think about where we are, depending on where you live, you're probably about 2 months into this. If you remember them in the first call we had, that's exactly what we expected, that this take about 2 months, give or take. And sure enough, we're right about that timeline. New York is probably going to take a little bit longer to open up than some of the other areas of the country. But I think it's critical to know that there is light at the end of the tunnel. We are starting to see this. The trick is here that we have to make sure we carefully monitor the situation to make sure suddenly it doesn't get worse again. But I don't think it's cliche to say that we are all in this together. Certainly the human tragedy and the saving of lives is paramount and our foremost concern. But at the same token, we've got to be careful not to do irreparable damage to the financial and well-being of tens of millions of Americans. Think about what poverty can do from a suicide rate or a homeless rate or just a health rate, you know, if you don't have health insurance. So there is two things we need to balance here, which is maintaining the spread of the virus, but also being able to reopen the economy. And then that economic data affecting how, in fact, we measure the stock market and the bond market. So at a time like this, when you think about your portfolio, I think the best advice I can give you is to be neutral. Don't overbet on stocks here. It's not time for that right now. There's not enough good data to tell us the stock market is going to go straight up from here. I'd be careful about the kind of bonds you own. I wouldn't want to own a lot of high yield here because we're going to get a lot of defaults. Places like small cap stocks and companies that have less revenue are probably going to suffer on the other side of this as to how much economic pain is being felt. have a higher quality positioning in your portfolios and higher quality fixed income and equity. Maybe more large cap stocks than small. Maybe more corporate and government bonds rather than junk bonds as a way to make sure that you're maybe holding a little bit of cash or preparing for some of the waves of volatility there are to come. As always, we're going to continue with these calls to try and give you some insight as to what we're seeing. And there are real reasons for optimism in spite of whether it's the labor market that's terrible, the earnings that's terrible. There is those little rays of sunshine we like to focus on, but we're not there yet. And for that reason, we want to continue to have these weekly calls, give you data that we think will help you understand where we're going with the stock market, the bond market, the virus, the spread, and how it's impacting the overall global and U.S. economy. My name is Phil Blancato. I'm from Ladenburg Thalmann Asset Management, Division of Advisor Group. Thank you for your time today. If you ever have any questions, please contact your financial advisor. They will reach out to us and we'll try and get your question answered as soon as possible. And more importantly, stay safe, stay healthy, wash your hands, don't touch your face, maybe wear a mask, and I hope we all get through this together real soon. Take care. Thanks a lot.